Okay, good evening. So, in honor of the new cycle of Daf Yomi, thought we would give a little bit of a, kind of an overview and an introduction to Maseches Brachos and try to place it in a context of Shas and specifically where it is here at the very beginning. And clearly, Kriyat Shema, the opening subject in Maseches Brachos, there's no question, is an important mitzvah. And that alone could justify its placement, and there is discussion in the Svarim as to why Shas starts with Kriyat Shema. The Rambam in his Peirush HaMishnayos points out simply Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem, and Noda Behuda in his Sefer Tzlach has a couple of additional reasons, perhaps to parallel Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichsav. Since Torah Shebichsav, we have the Asaras HaDibra, we'll start with Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It makes sense for Torah Shebaal Peh to start with Kriyat Shema, of declaration of the Yichud Hashem, or perhaps also, if we're going to have two Torahs, we have to remind ourselves that we only have one God. We shouldn't get the wrong impression now that we're starting a second Torah, that we shouldn't get the wrong idea. Or perhaps when Kriyat Shema has such a focus on Talmud Torah, and we might think, okay, how much Torah is there in the Torah Shebichsav? So that's a good time to get started with the Torah Shebaal Peh. We'll see that there is quite a lot that requires a lot of attention, a lot of time. And there's no question that Kriyat Shema is certainly an important mitzvah. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa, that's how we assume, even though there is a little bit of a machlokas about it, some machlokas in the Gemara later on. And it's a little bit of a machlokas rishonim. There are a few scattered tosafim in various places that take the position that Kriyat Shema is drabanan. But the vast majority of rishonim accept the position that Kriyat Shema is a mitzvah min haTorah. Now, what exactly that means, that's a little bit of a discussion itself. There are many possible positions. The Pri Chadash, in his commentary in the back of the Shulchan Aruch, he goes through all the different positions. There are those who understand that just the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema, that's the mitzvah min haTorah. We have a practice of always associating that with Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Vayed, even though that's not together with that in the Torah. That's a topic from this week's Parsha. That's what the Gemara Pesachim tells us, that that's what Yaakov responded when he was afraid that maybe his grandchildren were not following his path because he wasn't able to convey nevuah to them. He thought something was wrong, and they said to him, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and he responded, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Vayed. So we have a tradition to associate the two together. It's an interesting discussion how exactly that takes form, but there are those who say that just the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema, that's essentially the mitzvah min haTorah. There are others who maintain that the first paragraph is the mitzvah min haTorah, because we have the three paragraphs and not all together in the Chumash. So when we say Kriyat Shema is min haTorah, we have to figure out what that means. The Pri Chadash likes best the opinion that the first two paragraphs, that's Kriyat Shema min haTorah, because that's where you have, even though they're also in separate places, but that's where you have the language of the Daber Bam, of the Dibarta Bam. So these words should be said, that you find in those two paragraphs. The idea of all three paragraphs being Kriyat Shema min haTorah, as the Rambam has the formulation that this is Kriyat Shema, so that you have to bring in the additional component of the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, which has the same parameters in terms of timing, as we'll talk about in a moment. And it's not simply that, okay, it'll hitch a ride because they're observing the same time restrictions, but they supplement each other, and the idea of Yichud Hashem together with the recognition that this is the God who took us out of Mitzrayim, so that all becomes a part of what we call Kriyat Shema nowadays with that additional component to it. But Kriyat Shema, so we generally understand that yes, it's a mitzvah min haTorah, and it's certainly an important mitzvah min haTorah, and one that is worthy of attention and pride of place. The Vilna Gaon was of the opinion that even though this is what looks like a mitzvah of speech, it's not something that we can fulfill through Shemaya Ka'ona, that you can't listen to somebody else's Kriyat Shema, and he understood that that's why we find the first Mishnah talking about Kriya Shema in the plural, Me'emosai Korin Aseshma, as opposed to, for example, the first Mishnah in Megillah, which talks about in the singular, Megillah Nikres. So the Vilna Gaon said that when it comes to the Megillah, so you have one person reading the Megillah and the whole shul is listening. When it comes to Kriya Shema, everyone has to say his own Kriya Shema, and that has a different status than other things. Now, many postgame didn't feel that way, but it's an interesting position of why that should be, and the Karen Oru suggests that maybe it's because it's more than just speech. This is the declaration, this is essentially the pledge of allegiance of Judaism. This is like a maisa, this is essentially an action, a mitzvah shebegufo, so to speak. This is something that you're doing with your body, in essence, you're committing yourself. And it's not something that should be categorized as a speech-related mitzvah, even though it looks like one. Hi.
Rav Soloveitchik has a famous formulation of maisa mitzvah versus kiyum shebalev, and this Vilna Gaon sounds very similar to that. Did the Rav ever speak about Kriya Shema that way, or is anyone?
So that's an interesting question. We'll see. The Rav had many shiurim about Kriya Shema in his Yortzeit shiurim, and some of them we'll try to touch on a little bit. So it could overlap a little bit here, but the Karen Oru was understanding is that it's a little bit different than that, even that it's the distinction that you sometimes find that a mitzvah that is like about your body is not subject to shlichus, like tefillin is not subject to shlichus, or lulav is not subject to shlichus. So here, this isn't just words, this is you're committing yourself fully. So this is something that's even more than that. So there's no question that Kriya Shema is an important mitzvah. But the idea that it's placed where it is, the beginning of Shas and the beginning of Seder Zeraim, I think we could also look at it from a different angle. And so to try to place it in the context of how we could look at the themes of Shas, maybe to work backwards, and those who are doing Daf Yomi now for second or third or whatever time it may be, so maybe also could look backwards from previous Darim. So we have, okay, we have Zeraim and Taras, Zeraim to Taras, so Kachim and Taras. Those are more esoteric. Those are devoted to ideas that are purely about holiness. And we have in the middle, we have Nezikin and we have Nashim. So Nashim is about the construction of the Jewish family, and Nezikin is about the construction of the Jewish society and the Jewish community. What are Zeraim and Zmanim about? So Zmanim is about how the Jew goes through his year and about how he experiences the calendar and how it affects him. And before that, so Zeraim is about how he lives his life. And Zeraim, so much of it is about how one would make a living, and especially in an agricultural society. It's about how you go through your day, going through your activities, and how you do so with the perspective of the Ribono Shel Olam. And Brachos is a proper introduction to that, even though on the surface doesn't sound like it's about agriculture the way the other Masechtos are, but it's very much of a theme with all of these other Masechtos that make up Zeraim, because essentially what Brachos is about is how does the Jew encounter the Ribono Shel Olam throughout his day, and how does he incorporate his awareness of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and his mission of Avodas Hashem throughout his day. And that's a theme which I'd like to look at for the next few minutes. I think we can find addressed throughout Maseches Brachos, throughout the first paragraph, and really throughout all the Prakim, that that's really what the Masechta is getting at. And then that's what brings us really into the rest of Zeraim, and that's essentially where it's placed here in Shas.
Wouldn't it make sense to also have like Hilchos Stam also in Zeraim, if it's all about encountering whatever you encounter? You're going to encounter Tefillin, you can encounter Kriyas Torah?
I'm not sure, because I think when it comes to Stam is similar to Stam, Halachos are mostly in Menachos. Stam is really more like Karbanos, it's more like Hektish. These are things that are holy. These are things that are devoted in themselves. While, as we'll see, Kriyas Shema especially, and that which flows from it, I think is about taking your day and taking your experience and seeing how the Ribono Shel Olam is going to impact that. And when we start with Kriya Shema, what's also important to appreciate is the first Mishnah in Brachos is not simply telling us about Kriya Shema, but very importantly, it's telling us about when do we say Kriya Shema? How is Kriya Shema a part of the day? And Kriya Shema is particularly time-focused. And the first words of the Mishnah, the first words of the Masechta, Me'e Masai, at what time of the day, at what time in your life, is Kriya Shema going to be your occupation? And interestingly, associating it with Truma, although in this case the Kohanim being involved with Truma, also putting it in the context of Zrayim, at least in that maybe tangential way, but that's also worth noting. But the idea that we start off with that point, so how does Kriya Shema affect your day? How does this idea of recognizing the Yichud of Hashem, recognizing God's role in the world, how is that going to be a part of your consciousness and your awareness of your day? So the focus of time in Kriya Shema is huge. And we find that the idea of a nighttime Kriya Shema and a daytime Kriya Shema very much coming to define the mitzvah. So Machlokas Rishonim, the Rambam and the Ramban, whether it should be counted as one mitzvah, that was the Rambam's view, or two, whether the nighttime Kriya Shema and the daytime Kriya Shema constitute two separate mitzvahs, as the time is such a fundamental part of the identity. And it's also interesting to note that the way the mitzvah is formulated, first of all, even night and day is not the language of the Torah, but sleeping or lying down and getting up, which is focused more on your activity rather than any time of day. And it's a discussion, the Achronim or Choker, discuss whether is that fundamentally different than saying night and day, it just happens to overlap, or is this perhaps a poetic way of saying night and day, and essentially that's the way the Torah is conveying the same thing in different kinds of words. About 50 years ago or so, there's a sefer that came out called the Quintus Pnei Yehoshua. I don't think it's any relation to the classic Pnei Yehoshua, but the Quintus Pnei Yehoshua, the entire sefer, it's not such a big sefer, but the entire sefer is on Brachos Daf Beis. So there's a number of long essays on Brachos Daf Beis. So one of the long essays, is a chizik to everybody who starts Daf Yomi and only gets a Brachos Daf Beis. So in this sefer, he has an essay on this topic. He points out that a number of Rishonim, if you're a medayuk in the way they phrase things, so the Torah tells us, we say that Kriya Shema is a mitzvah min HaTorah, so it says, V'dibar t'bam, it says, B'shivtecha v'visech, v'atcha v'darcha, v'shochbecha v'kumecha. So some Rishonim are pointing to V'dibar t'bam, and some Rishonim are pointing to V'shochbecha v'kumecha as the source, as the mitzvah itself. So the whole mitzvah might, in fact, be defined by the time periods, may come to be characterized by that as the mitzvah itself, which is a very fascinating idea that here the Torah is really telling us that when we're in this mode of lying down and getting up, that's when we have this obligation to recognize the Kadosh Baruch Hu and to declare His oneness. And that language becomes tricky because the Kest of Mishnah, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, notes that there seems to be a lack of parallelism, because there's an opinion in the Mishnah that we don't paskin like at all. The first opinion in the Mishnah is that the Zman Kriya Shema at night should be limited to the first fraction of the night, understanding B'shochbecha as when you start to lie down. And when it comes to Kriya Shema during the daytime, so that's how we understand that it's the beginning of the daytime. So when it comes to the nighttime, we don't accept that opinion. We assume that Kriya Shema, at least Me'ikar HaDin, is all night. So why is there that lack of parallelism, asks the Kest of Mishnah, and he comes to the conclusion that it must be that Zman Kriya Shema during the daytime must also really be all day, so it must be that it's only Midrabanan that we have so Zman Kriya Shema, which I guess is some comfort to those of us who have a hard time getting up in the morning. But that wasn't, despite coming from the author of the Shulchan Aruch, that wasn't accepted by the Poskim. And the Taz and others point out that there's a grammatical difference between B'shach Bucha and Kamecha. They don't really parallel each other, that B'shach Bucha means you are lying down, the whole time you are lying down, and B'kumecha means when you start to get up. But one way or another, it puts this focus again on what you are doing and how you are doing things, and calls attention to this idea that that's essentially what this mitzvah is telling us to do. And the relationship between the two, the nighttime, the daytime mitzvah, it's also part of this objection, because the Magen Avraham objects to the Kest of Mishnah. He says, if you're going to tell me that Min HaTorah, Kriya Shema is all day and all night, and is only a Sof Zman Kriya Shema at all because of the Din Drabanan, so how could that square with the idea that later on we're told that women are Peturos Mikra Din from Kriya Shema, because Kriya Shema is a mitzvah, so say, Shahazman Grama. So according to you, Mechaber is saying it goes all day and all night. So the question is, yes, but it's passing the baton, it's in shifts, it's nighttime and daytime, so does that make it two separate mitzvahs, or is that one mitzvah that's going on 24/7 and shouldn't be called a mitzvah say Shazman Grama? So all of this really circles around this question of the time element within Kriya Shema. It's also interesting, the Shulchan Aruch has an opinion, two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch, whether there should be a concept of Tashlumin for Kriya Shema. If you miss Kriya Shema at night, can you make it up during the daytime, and vice versa. By Shlomo Warman, Zichron Levrach, and the Sefer Sheris Yosef, Chelek Dalet has an essay where he discusses that position, also surrounding the question of, do we see Kriya Shema essentially as a mitzvah that just has times of fulfillment, or do we see it as embedded within a certain time zone, and therefore the two mitzvahs are fundamentally different from each other? And the idea that Kriya Shema is tied into a time, say at night, as the first Mishnah discusses, is so important that the Mishnah considers at least that maybe there's a gezeira imposed on top of it, that maybe even if Kriya Shema could be said all night, but maybe there should be a gezeira to only say it until Chatzos, so that we shouldn't come to neglect the time. And that's a chiddush, because as the Prima Gaudin raises the question in a few places, the notion of a gezeira, normally we only have that if we're trying to avoid prohibitions. We don't want to violate a lo sase, so we make a gezeira, we shouldn't come to violate a lo sase. To not neglect the mitzvah sase, it's very unusual, and it's not clear that we have a justification from the Torah text to make a gezeira to prevent the neglect of a mitzvah sase. Some suggest that maybe this has to do with the severity of Kriya Shema. It's so, such an important mitzvah, this is going to be the one exception. So, some suggest, but it's an unusual idea that there should be a gezeira for mitzvah sase. And it's machlokas among the Rishonim whether this gezeira exists. So the Mishnah has this opinion, the opinion of Chachamim. Whether or not that gezeira exists is a machlokas. The Rush writes that we don't accept this gezeira. The Rambam does accept this gezeira. Interestingly, it's the reverse of the opinions by Pesach Knight and Afikomen. They have the inverse opinions here. But the Rush holds that the gezeira doesn't apply, and the Rambam holds that it does. Rabbeinu Yonah takes it further. He says, if the gezeira does apply, although he personally held it didn't, said, but if the gezeira would apply, according to that opinion, they remove the mitzvah, that after Chatzos, there's no mitzvah of Kriya Shema. That's how heavily they took this gezeira in order to make sure that it wouldn't be neglected. They negated the mitzvah, a very controversial idea, because even though we have the notion that Chachamim can be oker a mitzvah min haTorah, whatever that means, they can tell you not to blow shofar on Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. There's a whole discussion, does that mean that there's no mitzvah at all, or just you're prohibited to do it? So here, this is a pretty unusual formulation. Rabbeinu Yonah saying the mitzvah is gone after Chatzos, apparently so that you shouldn't messed up the next night, I guess, when you lost your opportunity tonight. But it's a pretty extreme formulation, all here to keep us focused on that night.
What is the nature of the not blowing shofar on Shabbos? Is that together gezeira or is it an akira?
Oh, that's a great topic. So that I got to come back to talk about. Yeah, so that's a big discussion, so I don't want to do too much of a plug, but if you, my next safer of all essay about that, but that would take many hours to thoroughly discuss, which we'd be very, very happy to do, but I will miss my plane. But but it's a fascinating topic. Rabbi Chan has an essay about this in the Kuntres Devarei Sofer. If you want, if you look in the Kavya de Kashesa, which is the Chalkas Yoav's 103 hardest questions. Number 99 is about this. And there's a lot to say, but unfortunately we can't go into all of it now. But
there are parallels between...
It would seem like it. Yeah, it would seem like there's a lot to, discuss about that. So we'll have to come back to talk about that. But in any event, so all of this emphasizes the role that this time element of Kriya Shema has. And then as the Gemara goes on to talk about this, we find that this notion of incorporating our awareness into the day is taken further in the parak. All of this is really yesterday's news. This is Daf Beis, but then we move on to tomorrow, to Daf Dalet. So the Gemara goes on to say there's also an institution of Kriya Shema al Hamita, which seems to be a separate institution there for the purpose of protecting from damaging forces. Seems to be a fundamentally different idea. Rashi on the first daf in Brachos in yesterday's news, Rashi says that when we daven Ma'ariv early in shul, so we can't fulfill Kriya Shema because it's still light outside, it's not Seisa Kochavim, so then Kriya Shema Lamita becomes the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. But Tosfos objects. Tosfos says, no, they're fundamentally different things, and it can't be that the Kriya Shema al Hamita, it doesn't sound like it from the Gemara, that can be the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. And Tosfos has a whole different approach to how we deal with early davening in shul. Tosfos believes that we actually are yotzei even in an earlier time before tzeis ha-kochavim. Most common approach nowadays is to follow the way Rabbeinu Yonah and others formulated, which is neither like Rashi or Tosfos, that we assume that we do repeat Kriyat Shema after dark, but not Kriyat Shema Lamita, a separate Kriyat Shema in between. But that's another example of incorporating this awareness through Ribono Shel Olam throughout the day. And then the Gemara goes on to also talk about Smichas Gula Tfila, also on tomorrow's Daf and Daf Dalet, and to tell us that the awareness of how Yetzias Mitzrayim took place requires us to incorporate into our structure of davening, of Gal Yisrael into Shemona Esrei, that we connect the two together. And the Gemara has discussion. We know that this is crucial for Shacharis. Is it also crucial for Maariv as well? So also in terms of how we set up the day and our awareness of the Ribono Shel Olam and his historical role as well. So the Gemara has this question. Do we assume tefillos be'emsa tiknum, that we should start and end our day with Kriyat Shema and have three tefillos in the middle? Or should we say, no, that just like we have in the morning, Shema then Shemona Esrei, at night also we should have Shema then Shemona Esrei. And that's the opinion that wins. But nonetheless, we find that it doesn't seem to equate, because we're very strict about it in Shacharis. We don't allow any daylight between Gal Yisrael and Shemona Esrei. And at Maariv, we're not so strict about it. And some of the Rishonim explain that because of Tefillos Arvus Rishus, which we'll try to talk about in a few minutes. It does not the same nature when it comes to Maariv. So it's a little bit halfway, because on the one hand, there is Smichas Gula Tefillah, but we don't take it as seriously or as severely. And Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his Yartzeit Shiurim, discussed this. The Stipler has a similar approach in his Sefer, where he points out that the idea of Smichas Gula Tefila, it's really two directions it can go in. And Smichas Gula Tefila, the Tefila enhances the Shema, because when you declare God's unity, so then you ask Him for your needs, it strengthens that statement, because it shows you really believe it. You turn to Him for your needs right away. Hashem Tzuri the Goali. And vice versa, that also Shema enhances the tefillah, because if you're going to ask the Kaddish Baruch Hu for something, so first you appease Him by declaring that you believe that He is the one creator of the world. So they enhance each other. So as Soloveitchik explained, that when it comes to Shacharis, they're going in both directions. So therefore it's a lock. There's a much more, the much stronger connection when it comes to Shacharis. When it comes to Maariv, because it's Tefillas Arvus Rishus, it's really only going in one direction, that Shema is enhancing Shemona Esrei, perhaps all the more so that we need a matir, so to speak, we need more of a justification for Shemona Esrei, so we have Shema first. But it's not really going the other way, because there's an asymmetry between the Shema and the Shemona Esrei. So
the Lashon of Geula there wouldn't be exact, though, because it's not really Geula, it's all Malchus Shemayim anymore.
Right, but in the framework of Berachos Kriyat Shema, which has its own unique nature also. But you're correct. So then, picking up from there, so then, for the next few Amudim, the next few Dapim in the Gemara continues with other ideas that also have to do with incorporating our Avodas Hashem into our daily and weekly schedule. Right after that, immediately after that, the Gemara talks about how we fight the Yetzer Hara through Talmud Torah. The Gemara says we should always try to battle the Yetzer Hara, and the Gemara has this three-pronged statement. The first, you should try with Talmud Torah, and if that doesn't work, you should try with Kriyat Shema, and if that doesn't work, you should try with remembering the day of death, a somewhat morbid suggestion. And this text was actually a major battleground text between the Musarniks and the anti-Musarniks at the time, when there was a major machlokis in the yeshiva world as to whether there should be a major focus on Musar, and a very intense kind of Musar, or not. So there were those who advocated for a very intense Musar, pointing to this Gemara, saying that you see that out of all the steps, the most successful step is Yasku Yom HaMisa, have this very morbid focus on how we're all mortal. And the response, I believe it was Reb Chaim Brisker who gave the response, said that no, that's the most extreme step, doesn't mean that's what everyone needs. It means only those who are really in need of spiritual refuah have to take the most extreme step. But if you're on a healthier spirituality, so then the previous steps should work. So by us and Velazhin, he said we don't need that because we have Talmud Torah. The first step is effective. So this was a ongoing debate. One could suggest, maybe to be Mekayim both of them, that the pasuk that the Gemara quotes there is when it talks about Talmud Torah, the language is Imru Belevavchem. And that's some bring that as a proof that Talmud Torah you can fulfill even behir her, even without speaking it out loud. But Bilavavchem also means speak to your heart. So it's Elu Velu, that those who are able to learn in a way that it speaks to their heart and it has an impact on their spirituality. And there are those who have a harder time getting it across, or those who aren't learning in a way that it gets across, and they have to perhaps seek out other methods. But so the Gemara mentions that also as part of how we work to get the Ribbono Shel Olam into our lives throughout the week and throughout the day. And in that context, also we find a little bit later on in Daf Ches, the Gemara talks about Shnayim Mikra VeEchad Targum, which is a program which is incorporated into our week, a somewhat challenging mitzvah that Chazal put onto our plate. It's hard to always get accomplished, but we do what we can. And there was a minority view in the Rishonim, the Ravan, that is also maybe a limud zchus for those who struggle, but it's not brought in the Shulchan Aruch even as a minority opinion. But the Ravan said that it's basically the home version for somebody who's not able to go to shul, so he can make up Kriyas HaTorah with Shnayim Mikra VeEchad Targum. It's meant to mimic the Kriyas HaTorah in shul. And this was not really accepted by Halacha. And Rav Kook expressed that, he said, it's quite the opposite, that there's a two-tiered system here. That Kriyas HaTorah in Shul, that is the Chovas HaTzibur. That's done for the congregation. And the individual is supposed to learn on his own schedule in a way that parallels what's taking place in the Shul. That's the Chovas HaYachid. One's not meant to replace the other, meant to complement each other. So one way or another, this is the understanding of many of the Rishonim and the Achronim. Some understood that it's a way of preparing for the Kriyas HaTorah in Shul. But one way or another, the two systems complement each other. And this becomes part of a weekly Talmud Torah schedule of the individual. So again, this the parak is telling us about how we're incorporating the Ribbono Shel Olam into our daily and weekly lives. And then also in the parak, the Gemara goes on to have some sugyas which are very relevant to this idea, including the idea of Osteik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. So the idea that even though we're trying to incorporate spirituality throughout our daily activity, but what if we're already involved in spirituality? So using the language of Kriyat Shema, so the Gemara tells us about this idea of Osteik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. If you're involved in one mitzvah, you're exempt from another mitzvah. And the Gemara says, using the language of Kriyat Shema, that you're obligated when you're belechtecha, when you're beleches didach, when it's your own path, you're doing your own thing, you're sitting in your own house doing your own thing, you're walking on your own path, so then you're obligated to take on these spiritual responsibilities. But if you're doing God's work already, so then you're exempt. And the Rishonim struggle with this concept because they assume that it's not simply an onus idea that you can't be two places in once, because they assume that's self-understood, that God doesn't expect you to do things that are impossible. So if it's impossible to be in two places at once, you can't do two mitzvahs at once, you don't need the whole chiddush of osik mitzvah patim and a mitzvah. So if this is a new idea, there must be some bigger chiddush than this. So the Ritva, for example, assumes that the bigger chiddush is that you don't even have the right to switch one for the other, that the second mitzvah becomes a rishus and becomes a voluntary action, and you would not be authorized to stop the first mitzvah to do the second one. And the Ran understood it very differently. The Ran said that it must be that this applies even when it is possible to be in two places at once. So then the Achronim have to modify that. It can't be if it's easy to do two at once, then clearly you wouldn't be Pater. But if it's possible but difficult, that's what the Ran must be saying, then you are technically Pater, and then we have to discuss how exactly to approach that. But that's one more discussion of how we are dealing with bringing our spirituality into our lives throughout the week. And then the Gemara over there also goes on to discuss Birchas HaTorah, that we have an obligation to make a bracha on Talmud Torah. And in practice, we do that once a day. And it's a discussion of Rishonim, why? Why should that be once a day? Why shouldn't it be less than once a day? If you make a bracha and you're learning all night, so why should you have to make a bracha the next day, or should you have to make a bracha the next day? So this was a machlokas Rishonim. Some understood that going to sleep is a hafsik, and that's why you have to make a new bracha. And others understood, no, that the day is the machayev. So even if you don't go to sleep, but a new day brings with it a relationship to that day that requires a new acknowledgement of the gift of Torah, which is why on Shavuos and other such days we have a suffix, because it's not clear how to relate to that issue, what exactly is the mechayiv of Birchas HaTorah, but it's one more statement of how we incorporate this perspective into our daily schedule. And the parak ends off talking about the idea of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, which, like we mentioned before, also works itself into the same kind of framework as Kriyat Shema, the same time parameters, and each one influences each other. And then as we get into the second parak, so the second parak talks about the concept of mitzvah srichas kavan at the very beginning, to what extent we need to have focus and awareness of doing a mitzvah, but it does so in an unusual context. And the Gemara concludes it's not necessarily reflective of the whole idea. It does so in the context of asking, what if somebody is, let's say, just editing a Sefer Torah? That's how the Gemara basically understands the Mishnah. If somebody is just correcting a Sefer Torah and he happens to be reading the same words of Kriyat Shema, then the time kicks in. So can he fulfill the mitzvah that way? So again, we have the same kind of questions coming up. And then, in the same Mishnah, it kind of flips it. So what if you're involved in Kriya Shema and your daily life presents itself? Let's say you're confronted by a person you know, or by a king, or by somebody scary. So do you interrupt to greet them? Do you create a hefsek? And the halachas of interrupting and hefsek are also brought in that Mishnah, which is essentially the inverse of that situation. When you're now involved in spirituality, how does the daily life get balanced with that? The Rav Shechter in the Sefer Mepnimi Harav has a very fascinating perspective on this, where he contrasts this with the dinim later on, the fifth parak, where it talks about a stricter standard for interrupting in Shmoneh Esrei. And when it comes to Shmoneh Esrei, there's a stricter standard that we don't interrupt for things short of pikuach nefesh. While in Kriya Shema, we do theoretically interrupt for Sheila Shalom or responding to Shalom of different standards. And he notes there that there is different motifs that we try to balance, that sometimes we want to emphasize the importance of humanity, and sometimes we want to emphasize that we are nothing in front of God. So in the context of Shmoneh Esrei, we emphasize that we are nothing and we don't interrupt Shmoneh Esrei for anything. And in the context of Kriya Shema, we have this focus that we learn from Avraham Avinu, who interrupted his meeting with God in order to welcome the Malachim. That becomes the mindset that's incorporated into Kriya Shema, which is a fascinating idea. And then we get to the third parak. So then we get to other considerations where mitzvos may not necessarily be the focus. So, for example, the Mishnah talks about aninus, nishameis mutal lefanov, when somebody is in a situation where a relative has passed away. So during that time, they're exempt from mitzvos, and the Rishonim discuss why that is. Is that because of kavod ames, or is that because of also like a mitzvah patim and a mitzvah because they are involved in taking care of the arrangements? Or if Soloveitchik had an additional understanding that maybe this was an emotional need when somebody is in a moment of shock, not to be involved in the performance of positive mitzvahs and light. But once again, it's fitting in with a theme of how we are balancing this awareness of our spiritual obligations together with our daily obligations. And also in that parak, we have the concept of kavod abrios, of attending to human dignity, and how that also is balanced with halachic obligations. We find that for Achila Hashem, we're not allowed to suspend halacha, but other situations, halacha does acknowledge the importance of human dignity. The Gemara says, Gadol Kavod Abrios, and we find that in many circumstances, with Din Rabbanan, or if it's a passive violation of even Torah law, that we find that Kavod Abrios does prevail. And it seems like here we're also understanding that the Adam created B'Tzelem Elokim is a reflection of God's glory, and how exactly we're able to balance the two and put them all into the same framework. And then we get into the fourth parak. The fourth parak is now talking about tefillah, but tefillah again is something very much time connected and very much time focused. And right away when we talk about tefillah, we're talking about proper times for tefillah, and we're talking about teshlum, and we're talking about how one tefillah can replace another tefillah if one is missed, prompting a question again in the Achronim, if tefillah is really essentially discrete obligations in different times of the day, or is it one floating obligation that has different slots of fulfillment that all connect to each other? And the Gemara right away goes into the sugya of Ma'ariv, seeing Ma'ariv as a reshus, as being someone on a different level of obligation, which is very striking as well, because the Gemara connects, at least in one theory, the tefillos to the avos, and Yaakov was considered to be the greatest of the avos, and Yaakov was also the author of Ma'ariv. So for Ma'ariv to be in a different status is a striking idea, and there are various suggestions whether we see this rather as a reflection of the idea that maybe this is because of the korbanos, and there was no real korban for Ma'ariv. Ma'ariv was the burning of the fats and the limbs. Or maybe even if we see it as Yaakov, maybe Yaakov's intention was different, or maybe Yaakov's moment of confrontation was different, that it was more personalized, as the Zohar suggests. And Vayifka Bamakom, he encounters God in a more personalized way at night that has a different nature. And just parenthetically, the Gemara also talks about that Mincha as being a Sicha, La Suach Basada. So Mincha, as we factor that into our day, though in some ways the hardest tefillah to factor into our day, is also fascinating to think about, because there are different opinions in Rishonim as to when the ideal time for Mincha is. The Rambam understands that Mincha is ideally at the end of the day, and early Mincha is really a kind of a bidyevet, and the Tur understood it the opposite way, that Mincha should ideally be earlier. And as the Aruch HaShulchan discusses, you have different perspectives here on what Mincha really symbolizes. That if you're understanding that Mincha should be, ideally be the earliest slot, the 1 o'clock Mincha, the 2:30 Mincha, whatever it is, it represents the idea that you're going about your day and you interrupt the middle of your day at the hardest time sometimes, the middle of the meeting, in order to pause and to acknowledge the Ribbono Shalom. While if you see it at the end of the day, it's kind of like a daily ni'ilah, that at every day, the last tefillah, at the very end of the day, you're able to pause and to reflect and to put that day into perspective. So that's the fourth parak, essentially, is dealing with those themes. Then we get into the fifth parak, we have tefillah itself, and the idea of kavana of tefillah, and the idea that tefillah requires a separation to a certain extent from our daily distractions, and ein omdin l'hespalel, that we don't get up to daven in the midst of all of our distractions and focus on other things, and we have to orient ourselves with the ashrei or something like that. And that's what Tosfos said yesterday in the first daf. Tosfos understood that Rashi first quotes. Rashi says that the reason we daven early, we say Kriya Shema, even if it's too early, is because it's like ashrei. We have to say ashrei before mincha in order to put tefillah in the context of Divrei Torah, so that we can put ourselves in the right framework of the right frame of mind. So too Kriya Shema serves that purpose for Ma'ariv as well. So the fifth parak gives us that focus of how we are incorporating everything into the day. And then we get into the sixth parak, we're talking about brachos on food and things like that. And when it comes to a bracha on food, so the Gemara tells us that really this should have been a din min haTorah. This is really a svara. This is something we can understand logically, that it's prohibited to be nena me'olam hazeh b'lo bracha, that we shouldn't be able to benefit from this world without acknowledging God's creation, without acknowledging the role of God in allowing us to partake in what should otherwise be considered exclusively His property, L'Hashem Ha'aretz U'Milo'ah. And while the Gemara seems to conclude that it is a din d'rabbanan, it's an interesting discussion how exactly to relate to that svara, because elsewhere in Shas, we do find that a svara, that's something that's logically compelling, has an authority that is equal to a din min haTorah. But apparently here it doesn't have that same level of authority, but it has nonetheless a very compelling nature to it. Rabbi Akiva Eger, in a comment section in the first parak, thought that maybe we should say that if you have a question about making a bracha before eating, maybe we should treat that like a suffik min haTorah. We should say that it's prohibited to eat without a bracha, so therefore it should treat like a suffik l'chumra. The later poskim didn't accept that. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, for example, wrote that the whole idea that you can't benefit from this world without a bracha, that's itself a din d'rabbanan, even though it's logically compelling, but as a matter of practical law, that's a din d'rabbanan. Just like a bracha levatala is also a din d'rabbanan, even though the Gemara says that if you make a bracha levatala, it sounds like it's a violation of lo sisa Hashem Hashem olkecha l'shav, but many Rishonim understood that's not literally the case, that if you're saying something b'tzura sabracha, so that's not an issa d'raisa, it's an issa d'rabbanan, that when the rabbis made the institution of brachos, they also said you should say them when they're appropriate and not say them frivolously, not say them when they're not appropriate, but it wouldn't really be a Torah violation of the Isser of taking God's name in vain. So then that parak essentially takes us through those themes, and then we get to the idea of when a bracha is an obligation when a Torah is Birchas HaMazon V'Achalta V'Stavata V'Rachta, and also the notion of Zimun, which gets us into the seventh parak. And then the next parak, and then the eighth and ninth parak, we talk about other ideas of incorporating the awareness of the Ribbono Shel Olam into activities that go perhaps above and beyond, things that are a little bit more unusual, such as natural phenomena, and such as seeing a king, things that are not necessarily a part of our daily life, but how we approach the Ribbono Shel Olam in these occasions as well, including the Gemara tells us that there was an institution to incorporate God's name into greeting people, that we have an obligation to acknowledge people, to greet people properly. That's an idea that's found in the beginning of the Masechta as well, and comes up in the end of the Masechta too. And there the Gemara tells us that there was a takana to greet people b'shem Hashem. So it's a good question why we don't see that so often nowadays. There are various suggestions. Some thought that it was a temporary takana, it was there to respond to a certain need, maybe a certain lack of awareness among the people. Others suggest that the idea that the word shalom is considered to be Shem Hashem, and that's the word that we use to greet people, so maybe that's kind of morphed into the idea of using Shem Hashem as a greeting. The Ajav Rav, the Moshe Epstein, he understood that it's not B'Shem Hashem, it's L'Shem Hashem, that the same way that we have the awareness through Ribbono Shel Olam and everything that we do, so we have to understand that the mitzvah of greeting people is also a part of that and should also be conveying that, that should be reflected in our greetings as well. So we find that also reflected here, and we find that even our dreams are analyzed here in the Masechta towards the end as to what does that reflect about our thoughts and our attitudes and our obligations. And the Gemara has various perspectives on this, whether dreams are meaningful or not. There's some combination somewhere in the middle, and sometimes a blend of things that are more or less meaningful. And it's a fascinating discussion of various perspectives. Some suggest it depends who's doing the dreaming. It depends whether it's dreams about the past or dreams about the future, or the dreams of a tzaddik, or dreams of a lesser person, or the dreams of yourself, or dreams about someone else. Various suggestions among the Rishonim and Achronim how to try to navigate a path as to when we pay attention to dreams and when we don't. It's a topic of recent parshiyos as well, but also this is taking it to another level. And then the Gemara essentially ending with the ultimate in God awareness, understanding that v'yahavta as Hashem Elokecha and v'chalavav v'chol nafshav v'chol me'odecha, the idea that that can be theoretically demanding on the highest level, requiring us at times to be ready to make the ultimate sacrifice in understanding what exactly it means to be aware of the Ribbono Shalom and to have that be a constant theme of our lives. So essentially, we see that the theme of how are we going to incorporate our awareness and our recognition of the Kaddish Baruch Hu, having a spiritual mindset as we go about our day on a daily level, on a weekly level, how are we going to address all of our experiences through the lens of mitzvah and through the lens of our Avodas Hashem is essentially the theme that Maseches Brachos has from the very beginning to the very end. It's the theme of all the prakim, and it's the theme of all the sugyas that draw a line from one place to the next, and that's going to then take you into the rest of Zerayim, which is about how one makes a living and about how one goes about their agricultural activities in that kind of a framework. But as the Masechta ends in the last daf and daf Samach Dalet, so it has 2 points at the very end which maybe are particularly relevant to people who learn daf Yomi. So maybe we'll just mention them and then we'll end here. That the Gemara mentions, first of all, the Machlokas, which appears there and elsewhere, about what's more important, if a Sinai or an Oker Harim. If you have somebody who is Sinai, somebody who's very knowledgeable, who knows a lot of Torah, or an Oker Harim is somebody who's a tremendous mafalpel, somebody has a tremendous analytical ability, so he's able to be so sharp, it's as if he uproots mountains. So which is considered to be superior? What's considered to be a greater need? The Shechter has sometimes quoted the line that they used to ask the question. It says, if an Oker Harim uproots mountains, so Sinai is a mountain. So of course the Oker Harim is better, it can uproot the mountains. So how could you have a question? It says, the answer is, the Oker Harim, you can't find a mountain. So if you can't find a mountain, so then you can't uproot it. So ultimately, the Gemara seems to conclude that Sinai is more important because everyone needs the ingredients. The best cook in the world is not going to be a good cook if he doesn't have the ingredients. So Sinai seems to win. But there is a discussion in Svarim about whether does that change once there is the printing press, so there's more access to Svarim, so you don't have to rely on one person knowing everything by heart. You can look things up, and that was long before there were databases and search engines and everything else. So one could be understood if they were to wonder if, okay, maybe nowadays is there room to say that there's less of an emphasis on the attributes of the Sinai. But I think it's a little bit of a misplaced question, because as much as it may be true that, yes, thank God everything is instantly accessible if you know what to look for and you know how to look for it, but the impact that Torah has on your personality is not going to come if you're not going to encounter it first. And yes, it's true that once you've encountered it, so then you know what to look for, and then you'll be able to find it. But it's a mistake to think that I don't have to know things in the first place because they're easily accessible at the click of a search button. And so I think Daf Yomi, as much as it's hard to retain everything, and as much as it goes by very quickly, but it has that dual advantage that it means that at least try to learn things once, and so that it should have that impact on the neshama and on the formulation of our personality. And then at least you'll know what to look for. You'll know that it's there, so that when you need to search for it again, I remember, I think there's a Gemara somewhere, so then you'll be able to make better use of all of those search engines. And the very last line of the Gemara, and we'll really conclude with this, the Gemara has a line which some have claimed is an example of the rabbis having a sense of humor. And they say you should start with a joke, this, and say this is a claim, is the Gemara ending on a joke. A number of Masechtas end on this line, and they say it's an example of a rabbinic sense of humor, because the Gemara ends the line, Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. The Talmidei Chachamim increase peace in the world. So the claim is, it must be a joke, because we all know there's so many machlokas in every daf and shas. How can you say that Talmidei Chachamim increase peace aren't they really increasing machlokas? But we can appreciate that, no, it sounds like they're increasing machlokas, but the machlokas is all the man hashom, the machlokas is all towards creating emes, and all understood in the spirit of that. And Rav Kook, in his comments to the Agadata, makes a comment along these lines, where he understands the idea of Talmidei Chachamim and Marbim Shalom, that Talmidei Chachamim teach us that there are many different kinds of Shalom, that Shalom can exist with many different opinions side by side, and that's not a steer to the idea of Shalom, and that's the essence of Riboy Shalom. So as we've gathered together for many events in honor of this completion of Shas and the commencement of a new cycle, so it should be a bracha that we should all have much hatzlacha in expanding our parameters of learning and understanding our notion of Shalom as Klal Yisrael learning together, and it should be a phenomenal success for all of us together. I thank you so much.